On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Back in the 1920s, there was a pseudoscience movement called eugenics. Eugenics is part of the story of a new movie out entitled Alleged, starring Nathan West, Ashley Johnson, Cole Meany, Fred Dalton Thompson, and Brian Dennehy. It's out from Slingshot Pictures. And here to talk to us is the co-screenwriter and the co-producer, Fred Foote. And the story is set in the middle of the 1925 Scopes monkey trials and the media coverage thereof. Fred, we're delighted to have you with us here on the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Doc, for having me.
I must admit that when I had the opportunity to review this movie, and we have some copies to give away too, so we hope that folks will stay tuned for their chance to do that, I was very, very pleased to see it, because the so-called Scopes monkey trial has been mangled by the media and was turned into a Broadway play that had little in actual common with the reality of the trial, called Inherit the Wind. It became a very popular movie, and most people, sadly enough, seem to get most of their history lessons from movies, whether they're accurate or not. This movie seeks to set the record straight and sets it in the context of a pair of fictional characters, but everything else, all of the events that take place in this movie, the historical events that take place, are factual, right?
Yeah, I think you have it exactly right. That Inherit the Wind was kind of about the Scopes trial, except it slandered the Christians of Tennessee and got all the facts wrong. And this movie is about the media bias and how it was that everything we know about the Scopes monkey trial and everything that's reported even today tends to be about 100% incorrect.
The two well-known protagonists that ended up getting involved in this case were William Jennings Bryan, who had been a three-time presidential candidate, had been Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson and resigned because he was concerned that Wilson was manipulating the country into going to war, and he didn't feel like he could support that decision. He was known as a great orator, perhaps the greatest orator in the United States. This is way toward the end of his career and toward the end of his life. Then we have Clarence Darrow, who is very well known as a very pro-socialist type lawyer who takes on cases and defends people that, shall we say, are not very popular clients. How did the two of them end up involved in the Scopes trial?
Well, what happened is in 1925, the state of Tennessee passed a statute that prohibited the teaching in the public schools of the evolution of mankind, which is, as you mentioned earlier, is eugenics. Strictly speaking, the application of the evolutionary theory to mankind became known as eugenics, and this was very troubling to the people in Tennessee because of what was in the textbooks and because of what was wrapped up in the teaching that mankind has evolved. Wrapped up in that was the idea, well, then who's most evolved? And maybe not surprising to the because of the people that kind of invented the theory, they figured that white Anglo-Saxon, Nordic, you know, Caucasians were at the top of the evolutionary ladder, because it's what they were. It wasn't scientific. It wasn't true. And then they proceeded in the textbook to rank the races so you could look around you in your community and figure out if you were one of the more advanced of the races, or maybe you were in the middle, maybe you were an Asian or a African-American. And then at the bottom of the totem pole would have been, say, the Aborigines in Australia, and they debated whether they were even human in the 1925s. Maybe they were a different species than white Anglo-Saxon males, and this, of course, was a wicked and deadly doctrine, as we found out just 15 years later when we opened up Dachau in the prison camps of Nazi Germany. They had applied this theory to the Jews and to the Gypsies and to various other people, and had murdered 6 million of them in the process. And then Mao applied the theory, and Stalin applied the theory, and this whole notion that man was just an animal was very, very much in vogue and very popular. So the citizenry of Tennessee objected to this. They did not fear evolution. They did not fear it being taught in the schools. And you could teach the entire theory all any aspect of it as truth in Tennessee, except for one out of 2 million species, mankind, they objected to teaching that he was an evolved animal. Well, what they did that, the ACLU in New York, an unknown group, got involved and wanted to find a test teacher in Tennessee, and they found John Scopes, who, although he had not taught evolution to his classroom, as is commonly thought, he volunteered to do it, and it was sort of a caper, kind of a friendly put-off, in a way, to bring people into Dayton, Tennessee, and host the Trial of the Century, which they did. And that's how William Jennings Bryan got involved, because the state of Tennessee wanted someone to deliver the killing closing argument, which he wrote and was prepared to do. And then the ACLU hired Clarence Darrow, the famous agnostic and atheist and lecturer and attorney, and he came in and defended John Scopes, and they had really, literally, the trial of the century. Thousands of people poured in from all over the world. It was a media event like none other that had preceded. It first live radio broadcast in history. More words were cabled to Europe every day relating to this trial than about any other event that has ever been cabled to Europe, and that was a new technology. So it really was an amazing trial with twists, turns, and personalities and issues that were momentous. But what we've been told about it, as you said, we've been told a pack of lies about it, because, well, the victors tend to write the history, and the people who won that battle, at least at one level, as far as public education goes, were the evolutionists, and so they've taught us, in error, they've taught us that the Christians of Tennessee were simply fearful, bigoted, ignorant, and mean.
A perfect example of that, and one of the other protagonists who's not a lawyer, not really involved in the trial itself, but it's his take on the trial and his covering of the trial and his decision about what the trial meant, despite not even seeing the end of the trial. He was the one who shaped the opinions of the world, and these opinions were the ones that reflected in the play and the movie Inherit the Wind, and that's the Baltimore Sun editor, H.L. Mencken, who is considered one of the most influential columnists in the country at the time, and he was absolutely viciously opposed to Christianity. He went out of his way to portray Christians in Tennessee and everywhere as superstitious and as backwards and ignorant people, and if they had any sense at all, they'd believe the same way he did, which was to be a naturalist. That is, the only things you can count on are the things that you can see, touch, smell, hear, or taste. And this really made a huge change in the way that naturalism was seen as a significant philosophy, especially educationally, in the United States. When Sputnik came along 30 years later, that was the opportunity for science, for increased money to science. That was when Darwinism became completely ensconed in all of the science books in the curriculums across America.
That's right. Yeah, it was a religious viewpoint. Materialism is a religious viewpoint, just like theism is. And Mencken embraced it. And, you know, to be maybe fair, I don't know about fair, because what you said is entirely accurate, but Mencken, he really despised do-gooders of all kinds. So a religious do-gooder like William Jennings Bryan, and I use that, you know, in quotes, the guy that thought he could help the poor and all that kind of stuff would great make Mencken. But Mencken also didn't like FDR. He didn't like the New Deal. He didn't like politicians. He didn't like public schools. And, you know, regarding a lot of those things, when you read his writings, I sit there, nod my head and laugh, because he seems so sharp and so clever and so on the money in a number of these areas. But as it came to the Scopes trial in Christianity, he was all in for the materialist, and he himself was a eugenicist. He supported lukewarmly Hitler in the Third Reich before they were exposed for what they turned out to be. And yeah, so Mencken set the tone of what we know today about the monkey trial in Tennessee. And he figures heavily into this film as well, alleged, that it's just been released.
Right. We're talking to Fred Foote, who's one of the screenplay authors of Alleged, one of the producers of the movie. Fred got an early start in movies when he was one of the investors for The Passion of the Christ and Bella, which is really a pro-life movie. And Fred got involved in this project because he wanted to bring more attention to this terrible fake science that was roundly embraced in America in the early 20th century. And the reason for it was that it seemed logical from a naturalist standpoint that the more evolved you were, the higher a species you were. And Planned Parenthood, the birth of Planned Parenthood is tied up in this too, because the mother of Planned Parenthood believed that she was more evolved and that her morals were more evolved. She was an adulteress her entire life, and she believed that was perfectly okay, because she was more evolved and she didn't have to be limited by those old-fashioned rules and regulations from the Bible. And the part of the thing that I've read about Planned Parenthood is that the idea was to, over time, eliminate the quote-unquote inferior, unevolved races, which meant all of the races of people who weren't white Anglo-Saxons.
Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist to the hilt. Planned Parenthood was not about birth control for upper crust, you know, people at that time who weren't getting pregnant. Planned Parenthood was designed to keep black people from having black babies. And that's why they plant, then and now, I believe, that's why they plant their clinics almost entirely in minority neighborhoods. That's why they fund forced abortions in China and help support the one-child policy, which results in the elimination of almost any handicapped child born in China is killed because they can only have one child. And many women are actually killed. Perfectly healthy, born little girls in China are killed because there's only one family or one child per family. And so now the instead of 50-50, roughly, there's significantly many more males in China than females. And it's partly this eugenist idea that you keep the good and you can kill the bad.
Right, with impunity. And now, in Alleged, a way that this eugenics is brought in comes in kind of quietly, and I really liked how you did this. It's this one of the things I like about this movie. It's a very good, entertaining and informative movie. It is never preachy. It just presents the facts, and when you see them, you realize, oh my gosh, the younger sister of our heroine Rose, who's a young copywriter who works with Charlie Anderson at the at a small town newspaper his late father had founded, and Rose is apparently she's the sole support for her younger sister, and her sister has epilepsy. And in the parlance of those days, epileptics were seen as, that was just seen as another form of mental retardation, and therefore they were unworthy of reproduction. And Rose's uncle plans to sterilize his young niece, whether Rose goes along with it or not.
Yeah, that's right. It's the kind of thing that happened, and it's the kind of thing that we've not been taught. Even though 60,000 Americans were sterilized in America in the 1920s. It was legal in something like 17 states, including my home state of Michigan, where they sterilized people against their will. And the reason we don't know about it, even though it was exposed in Hitler's Nazi Germany, the reason we don't know about it is because it was endorsed and propagated from the top, from Harvard, Princeton,
right.
Yale, University of Chicago. If this had been done by, the Pentecostals, or by the Catholics, it would be the first chapter in every history book. It would be like the Salem witch trials, which were regrettable and involved, the killing of, several dozen people. But this is on a far greater scale, and yet it's been buried because the victors write the history books, and the scientific and media elite, they still run the show in the public schools until they don't want kids knowing what a wicked doctrine they once supported in the name of of Charles Darwin and evolution.
Now, the eugenics laws kind of quietly went away after we unearthed the death camps in Germany.
Yeah.
Because it didn't take a really savvy person to make the connection between let's slaughter all the Jews because they're inferior to us and let's sterilize people in America who we think are inferior to us.
Yeah, that's right. And eugenics was even more philosophical than just sterilization or in Nazi Germany, the murder of unfit people. They were calling into question, and this really bothered William Jennings Bryan enormously because he was a very compassionate man and very much believed in Christian charity and in helping the poor and all these kinds of things. And in the textbooks, it was telling the kids, charity might not be as rosy as you think. You might be hurting the race by being charitable to people with bad backgrounds or handicaps or mental disorders. So he was very calling into question the very essence of Americanism and American goodwill and charity, and suggesting from a scientific viewpoint, you might be interfering with nature.
Right.
And maybe we should cut the funding, and maybe we should cut our losses with certain people, and certainly separate them from the general population and not allow them to have children.
Which is pretty, horrific, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
for all intents and purposes, you know, they were in favor of, well, let's let the people who we think are inferior either die out because we'll sterilize them, or we'll let them starve because, after all, it's survival of the fittest.
And it's in the high school textbook. You almost can't believe it when you read it. And this is what was opposed by the Christians of Tennessee. And just because they dared speak out against evolution, even though it had this wicked dimension to it, just because they did that, history has treated the Southern states or Christian or Bible believers like they're morons.
Yep.
And that's what Inherit the Wind did. And it's rather than getting credit for identifying a wicked practice in front of everybody else, these Bible believers who believe that people are made in the image of God and deserve our love and protection no matter who they are, but for stepping out and having the courage to say that's wrong, they've been vilified, and the eugenics part gets ignored. It's really a tale that deserves to be told what really happened, and the people of Tennessee should be proud of the Scopes trial. Instead, they've been made to feel embarrassed by it.
The thing that surprises me the most, and by the way, if you're just joining us, Fred Foote is our guest today on the Bookshelf. We're talking about his new movie, Alleged, which is available from Slingshot Pictures and Image Entertainment. Alleged stars Nathan West, Ashley Johnson, Colm Meaney, Fred Dalton Thompson, and Brian Dennehy. It's an excellent cast. Direction is good. The sets are excellent. All of the details, all of the things that could easily be anachronistic are very carefully watched. The clothes and the accessories, the window dressings, the shoes, the cars, the trains, everything is absolutely historically accurate. And I know that sounds petty to think about stuff like that, but if you're going to make a movie and you want to influence people, you've got to be really sure about these sort of things. You can't be careless because that's going to divert people who are already going to have to be convinced that you've got a real story here. And so I think that was really excellent that you guys worked so hard to make this movie look so good and be and everything in it to be so historically accurate.
Yeah, the crew did a great job, and it was a lot of fun to make. We made it in Michigan at a little historic village just outside of Flint, and it was freezing cold. It was in September 2 years ago. I mean, the temperatures got down below 40, and Ashley Johnson, the girl who plays Rose, is wearing these thin, sheer, little light dresses because she's supposed to be in Tennessee in 1925 in the middle of the summer.
Right.
She's freezing. but they pulled it off. I mean, it got so cold. I don't know if you noticed in a scene or two, you can see the breath coming out of their mouth. It's frosty, and yet everyone's wearing summer clothes, and we colored it and so forth to make it look like it was a nice, warm, you know, week in Dayton, Tennessee.
Is Ashley Johnson, wasn't she a child actress? I recognize her face.
Yeah, she was in Growing Pains, TV series. She's been in several movies. She was in, I don't know if you ever saw Mel Gibson's movie, What Women Want?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she was his daughter, and she was going to the prom.
Of course.
Prom date was going to take advantage of her, and so she's crying in the bathroom. And
right.
So that's Ashley Johnson. And then right. She was just recently in The Help, which was, a huge
right.
Practice.
Right.
Released,
so she's one of those child actresses who was really talented and has been able to sustain a career as she got older and turn into a lovely young woman. She does a wonderful job in the movie. Nathan West, whose previous film credits include Miracle, does a wonderful job as Charlie Anderson, too.
Yeah, he's a great actor, and his wife actually is, now I don't see the series, but Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah,
Nathan West's wife is the younger Gray, if that makes any sense to anybody, the younger sister or something like that.
So well, how
he
about
comes
that?
From a family of actors, and his wife actually is a huge actress, television actress.
Well,
I don't even know her name, Chloe or something.
I'm sure people will Google it. Getting Fred Thompson in this, that's quite a coup too. And playing, and since he's been a presidential candidate, that was kind of interesting having him playing William Jennings Bryan. I was really fascinated by Brian Dennehy as Clarence Darrow, because everything I've read about Clarence Darrow, I didn't really hold him in very high regard. And yet Brian Dennehy managed to make him, even though the real guy comes through, you get the feeling from his portrayal that he knows what's going on, too. And I love the scene where he's interviewing the scientists who are coming up with all this bogus information, which, by the way, now has been completely discounted and yet still shows up in older school textbooks. Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny and all that stuff. And he asked them if they believe in the Bible, and they say, oh, yeah, we're Christians. And then he asks them about miracles, and they don't really believe in miracles. And he's not going to put them on the stand because he realizes he may not be a Christian, but he knows they aren't either.
That's right. Yeah, one of the mysteries of the trial that you'll never hear anywhere, and you won't even read it in the text, you just will not hear this about the Scopes Monkey Trial, and that is this. Clarence Darrow kept the scientists off the stand. They were willing to put them on the stand as long as the jury was dismissed, because they really weren't relevant to the charge of whether John Scopes did or did not teach evolution.
Right.
That's just a factual issue. So they tried to figure out a way, well, how do we get the scientists on the stand? And Darrow said, well, why don't we discharge the jury, and then we'll hear what the scientists would say, and the appellate court can read the transcript. Well, that sounded good to the judge, who wanted this little show to keep on going, and he was in the limelight and having the time of his life. And even Brian said, yeah, no, that's no problem. I'd love to hear what they have to say, as long as I can cross-examine them. Well, when the judge said that whoever they put on the stand would be cross-examined, Darrow flipped out. He flipped out, and I would ask anyone, why wouldn't Clarence Darrow put his scientists on the stand? What was he afraid of? And in this little scene that you just alluded to, I think maybe the chief reason is he had picked scientists who taught in Sunday school, who were faithful people going to their congregational church in this place or that place. But in reality, they were called modernists. They kind of believed the Bible, and they sort of believed that Jesus was a good guy. But they didn't believe that Jesus could walk on water, that he was born of a virgin, that he rose from the dead, that God split the sea for Moses. They didn't believe any of that stuff. So what kind of Christian in Tennessee in 1925 could stand up there and say that he really didn't believe any of the miracles of the Bible? They'd be run out of town, or at least not believed as authentic believers. You're just sort of social believers or, country club Christians or something like that. And I think that's why. I think Brian would have exposed that right away, that not only didn't they believe in Adam and Eve, that's fair enough, but you don't believe any of it. So why should you believe in Adam and Eve or the six-day creation or anything else?
Right.
And, the evolutionists, those brave guys that are open-minded and are courageous, in Dayton, Tennessee, they were cowardly to the max, and that's never exposed in any of the textbooks.
Yeah, and that same idea continues today. When asked to honestly debate something, instead they attack the Christians who are creationists, and make fun of them rather than get into debates. The very few times this has actually happened, there was a famous atheist from England who was in a series of debates with a man who befriended him, who was a Christian creation scientist. And toward the end of his life, the atheist stunned everyone by standing up and proclaiming, "I have begun to believe that there is an intelligent cause for the universe." And he didn't go quite so far as to acknowledge belief in Jesus Christ, but he was convinced to change his mind 180 degrees because he was in an honest debate. And I'm getting the feeling that that's the reason that they don't like to be in honest debates.
They really are sort of cowardly in that way. They won't debate, or they'll define you as a non-scientist. They'll say, every serious scientist in the world believes in evolution. And you say, well, what about so-and-so and so-and-so? Well, they say, well, he's not a serious scientist. They'll just define a serious scientist as one who believes in evolution. If you don't, you're a moron.
Right.
Even
and so
it's a PhD from University of Purdue so it goes on and on. They talk a big blustery game. They swing their weight. They control the schools, but they are not interested in any serious critique of Darwinism or any debate that the world was created by an intelligent and powerful being.
Well, Fred Foote, our guest today on The Bookshelf, his new movie that he wrote and was one of the producers of is Alleged. It's available from Slingshot Pictures and Image Entertainment. It accurately portrays the real events of the Scopes monkey trials in Dayton, Tennessee in 1925 and exposes the truth, which is you will not find if you get your history from Inherit the Wind. Fred, where can people find a copy, other than those that win a copy from us, where can people find a copy of Alleged?
Well, you could go to our website, which is www.allegedthemovie.com, and there'd be a link to buy it there. More importantly, it's at Walmart, in most Walmarts across the country. They'll have copies of Alleged. If they don't, order it by name because they're stocking it in most of their stores. You can also get it at Amazon.com or BestBuy.com, or local Christian retailers might be stocking it on their shelves because we've made arrangements with many of them to stock Alleged.
Wonderful. It sounds like you're making it very available, and that is wonderful news as well. Fred, thank you so much for being with us on The Bookshelf today. Time just flew by. It's a wonderful movie. I heartily encourage people to get a copy and to see it, share with their families, for churches to sponsor showings of it and so forth. And thank you again for being with us today on The Bookshelf.
All right. Well, thank you, Doc.
Our thanks again to Fred Foote, who is the writer and the producer of Alleged. And once again, that alledgedthemovie.com. Thanks so much for joining us on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next week, same time on your favorite radio station. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.